You are listening to Bicycle Talk. It is November 15th, 2017. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week with my co-host, Fran Storch.
Hi.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, upcoming news in the cycling business and bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can call or text right now at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you'd like to contribute to the show or be on as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Okay. First thing on my list, Ron's rant of the week, and that will be self-driving cars. Why am I bringing this up? Because in the UK, a cyclist was killed by a Tesla car with self-driving features. This is the second death, by the way, in the world of self-driving cars. The first one was in Florida, where someone was killed in their self-driving Tesla, which did not actually communicate well with the car, that the car was driving into the side of a truck. And this technology is, you know, it's scary enough that we're out there on the road with people who are not paying attention while they're driving, but now we have cars that can't pay attention when they drive. I'm not sold on this yet. So anyway, the cyclist who was killed was an 80-year-old man, and he was killed by a Tesla Model S, an electric car with some autonomous capabilities, struck him as he rode his bike near the UK village of High Shincliffe. The cyclist, identified as Fred Heppel, a former bank manager from Lancaster in the UK, was airlifted to Newbury Hospital, where he later died. Initial reports say did not indicate the driver faces any charges, although police are reportedly seeking eyewitnesses to the crash. While not a fully self-driving vehicle, the Model S has an autopilot feature that allows the car to steer itself in certain circumstances. Promotional videos online show test drivers letting go of the steering wheel while the vehicle maintains a speed and control on relative straightaways. It tops out at 90 miles per hour in autopilot mode. How about that? According to the company website. So, it's not really clear whether the driver in Friday's crash had applied the technology at the time of the collision. The police and reporters described the crash where it occurred as a predominantly straight road with gentle inclines. And by the way, Heppel was, by all accounts, an experienced rider. Fred averaged 10,000 miles per year on his bike, and his wife, by his side, had cycled across America, Australia, Argentina, Chile, New Zealand, and a host of other European countries in his retirement years. So anyway, Tesla says it encourages Model S drivers to stay alert and keep their hands near the steering wheel, even when in autopilot. The availability of the quasi-self-driving car raises all kinds of questions and concerns about the dangers of vehicles may pose to cyclists. So, this goes everywhere. There's lots of other articles out there. Two new studies suggest the rise of ride-hailing apps and self-driving cars could lead to greater congestion and fewer trips by bike. So you start getting into more self-driving cars, you get into more Uber trips or Lyft trips, and less people are inclined, like 2% less are inclined to use their bicycles, which is really sad. So are they good for us? Not in my world, because I'm the type of guy that would rather see more people riding their bicycles, because bicycles are less polluting. Their environmental impact is far less. Their general impact to society is far less. And not to mention their increase of fitness to society is far greater. So I'm more of a, you know, I'm a bike guy. That's why the show is called Bicycle Talk. That's what we're here to talk about. So the self-driving car, that's my rant of the week. Why are we doing this? Can someone please contact me out there who has some experience with these things, who knows what the technology is, who can enlighten me to the fact that this is going to make my world safer as I'm riding my bicycle or if I'm a pedestrian in the street. I'm not sold yet. I'm really, you know, it may be a lovely idea for people who want to transport themselves and would rather play with their iPads than drive their cars, but it's really not a great idea for the rest of us that are out there, the vulnerable users on the road. I think that's what we are known as vulnerable users. So, you know, we really need to pay attention to that. So, moving from that, I have on a positive side. On a positive side, I came up with this one. And I have mentioned this one before, which is, it's kind of a funny thing, but I just thought it would fit nicely with the rant. And there was a track standing cyclist. And if you are a bicyclist, you know probably what a track stand is. If you don't, I will enlighten you to. It's the thing that you can do when you come to a stop and you can just balance yourself on your bike without putting your feet down on the ground. So it is a technique of balancing yourself. It is a required, not required, it is an acquired skill, and it's hard. It's hard to do. I find that if you're going to do a track stand, it's most beneficial to do or easier to do if you're on a single speed bike that has a fixed gear, because you can just roll your feet back and forth kind of like you're on a unicycle or something like that, and you can kind of keep yourself up on a track stand. If you don't have that, if you have a multi-speed bike with a freewheel on it, or even a single speed with a freewheel on it, it's always easiest to do it if you have just a slight grade that you're pushing up against. That kind of helps you have that applied force and pressure back against you, and it allows you to try to do this. I don't recommend it with your clipless pedals right away, because you will find yourself in a heap on the ground connected to your bicycle and you can get hurt. So that's not a great thing. But I do recommend trying it out. Try it on a soft surface like off-road, like on your front yard or something like that, and learn how to do it, because it's kind of a cool thing. It's fun to learn how to do. And it always mystifies cars when you're at intersections, when there you are with both your feet still on the pedals and your hands on the handlebars, and you're holding completely still. It's kind of cool. But anyway, in Austin, Texas, Google has been testing one of its newest innovations, the self-driving car. And while the car is designed to work with, not against, cyclists by reading and interpreting hand signals, I'd like to know how that works. So anybody out there from Google listening, let me know how that actually works. I know it's probably camera driven, but kind of like the same thing as the lane technology that keeps you from crossing over, drifting over into another lane. But I'd love to see how the Google car sees my hand signals. That would be impressive. I'd like to know how that works. Anybody out there know anything about it, please just give me a shout out at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. So anyway, it seemingly hasn't taken into account the cyclist's ability to hold a track stand rather than put a foot down at a stop sign. Or at least that's what one cyclist reports experiencing. By the way, there is a if you poke around online and you go to YouTube, you can find a video where someone was doing this with the Google car. It's hysterical. It's absolutely hysterical. And if I can find that again, I will post it on my Facebook page so you can check it out, the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. The story, which a cyclist in question reported from the cycling forum, has been picked up across the globe for its implications concerning cyclists and smart cars, as well as its weirdness. A Google self-driving Lexus had been on the road testing in his neighborhood for a few weeks, and near the end of the recent ride, he stopped at a four-way stop sign just after the Google car did. So he paused in a track stand waiting for the car to make a turn. It apparently detected my presence. It's covered with GoPros, so it's got those GoPro cameras all over it. So that answers that question from earlier, and stayed stationary for several seconds, he writes. It finally began to proceed, but as it did, I rolled forward an inch while still standing. The car immediately stopped. I continued to stand. It continued to stay stopped. Then as it began to move again, I had to rock the bike to maintain balance. So it stopped abruptly. It's just too funny how you can trick the technology out there. So we as cyclists kind of a funny thing. Could, when we get all these wonderful self-driving cars out there that can anticipate every move that we make, we could bring traffic to a standstill. Isn't that interesting? I think that's kind of fun. But not that I'm asking anyone to go out and do that or advocating it in any way, but it would make for a fun day, wouldn't it? So anyway, there's my on the positive side for today. Track standing cyclist takes on self-driving cars. The maintenance minute. We're having a nice little piece here called the maintenance minute. What to, you know, different things that you can learn about your bicycle. And this maintenance minute, I'm going to put to what to put in your seat pack or your hydration bag. Many of us carry a seat pack behind the seat on our bicycle. And in that seat pack, or if you don't, you should, or you could, you want to put basics in that seat pack. Or some people also carry a hydration bag. Typically, a mountain bike person who is riding off-road and wants to carry their hydration with them will carry a bag on their back which has their water in it, so they don't have to take their hands off the handlebars. And they also have multiple pockets, so they can store lots of things in there. So the basics, if you're just going to go for a ride and you want to go out there with the basics, you want to bring a tube, a tire, some tire levers, and a pump. So if you get a flat tire, you can solve the flat tire problem. If you want to extend that bag and you or your pack and put more in it that will be even more useful to others, you can put a spoke wrench in there. You can put a dollar bill in there. I'll get to that in a minute. You can put duct tape in there. I'll get to that in a minute. Chain tool, a multi-wrench, which may have a lot of these tools on it, and a patch kit, and maybe an extra tube, too, just in case. So not only do you have one tube, maybe you should have two tubes. You never know. It depends on the ride you're going on, what your day's like. If you're a commuter and you're riding in a lot of really ugly, nasty, rotten roads that are covered with debris that's thrown out of motorized vehicles, not to point any fingers, you might want to carry a couple of tubes with you. You also might want to consider a tire, which is going to be puncture-proof or mildly puncture-resistant if you're in that type of situation every day. Backing up to the duct tape and the dollar bill. Well, I have rescued more people than not with the dollar bill. And the dollar bill is good old U.S. currency. It is a very, very strong paper. It actually, I don't know if it still does or not, but it used to have silk in it, and it's a very fine weave, and it tends to be extremely difficult to puncture through, and it's very strong. So what you do is if you have a cut in your tire that's just way, way, way too big to get yourself home, and you know that if you just inflate that tube again, you're going to see the tube poking up and through, you need to stop that from happening. Now, there are companies out there that make these things called tire boots, and which you can also carry with you if you want to purchase something like that. But if you're in a pinch, you can do the same thing with a dollar bill. And what you do is you just fold it over a bunch of times so that it sits right where the slice is in the tire. And you reinflate and you can get home on it, which is a great thing. You can do the same thing with duct tape. A small amount of duct tape goes a long way. You can roll it around something and keep it in your bag. You may have to change that every once in a while because with heat and the duct tape can get kind of gooey back there. And it doesn't have a super long shelf life, but it will help you in a situation. So that's kind of cool. And so those things will basically get you home. And then the other thing that I put on here on my maintenance minute of what to carry in your seat pack or hydration bag is $10. Bring some money with you just in case you might need to, stop for some food, that sort of thing. Or you also want to bring along identification. If you're not using one of the nice little bracelets that both Fran and I ride with, then you can, which has all our ID on it and emergency numbers. You might want to just take a piece of paper or something that has all of your information on it, laminate it so that it doesn't get destroyed on a wet day. You can laminate it either professionally or you can also laminate it with the good old packing tape, which works good. Clear packing tape will last a long time, and it'll keep your information there. So just in case somebody has to find you somewhere, they have your information. And, of course, a cell phone. And the cell phone can fit in your bag if it's small enough, or if the bag is large enough, the way cell phones are getting these days. You can also they have carriers that you can put on your bike, and you can carry your cell phone with you if you wish to do that. I find the cell phone is essential only because I don't just use it for, an emergency situation such as, 911 or whatever, but I also use it as a wonderful tool and weaponry with motorists that get a little out of hand. And you pull that cell phone out and you let them know that, you're now on the phone with 911 or with the state police, and they tend to calm down and talk to you in very rational ways. Another thing you can put in your bag would be some food. You can put just small things in, like a gel pack, small energy bar, maybe, a handful of nuts in a plastic bag, something like that. Just anything that you can think of that won't take up a lot of space and is there just in case you need it. So those are the things that you might want to carry with you on your bicycle when you're out for a ride. Just Maintenance Minute is all about what to carry with you today. Okay. Now, this is a good thing, because as I have been doing this now for a year and a half, or I'm up to 71 or 72 episodes now, and I'm starting to get more and more people who are sharing with their friends and saying, hey, listen to this. It's kind of a cool thing. It's my friend Ron who does this, or it's someone who I've met work acquaintance over the years, and they have then shared it out. I'm getting more listeners, and I want to take a moment to really thank you all for listening. And and some people who are now discovering Bicycle Talk, this is great. It's a great forum. We can talk a lot about different things. And as we get more popular, as the show gets more popular, I start to get more comments, some in a very positive way and some, a little edgy. But that's okay. I want you to talk to me. That's what I am here for. I am here to answer questions. I am here to learn with you about what we can do to make cycling better in our country and in our towns and communities. So anyway, I got a comment from a gentleman by the name of Jim Van Cura, and he said that vehicular cycling is not good. And so anyway, Jim... He doesn't like it because it is the law here in the U.S. and it's also what keeps people from riding. Would you ride out into traffic and take a lane with your family? Or do you expect a person who is just starting up bicycling to work to ride out a 50-plus and work out and ride in 50-plus mile-per-hour traffic to prove the point that bicycles belong? No, Jim, I would not do that. I would be doing it responsibly. I would be doing it safely. And I do take all these things into effect. I am not going to take a family out onto a 50-mile-per-hour traffic road. I generally am the guy, and everybody around here knows me as the guy who likes roads with names, not numbers. Why do I like roads with names, not numbers? Because our roads up here in the Northeast are very twisty and turny and windy and narrow. And because of that, you can't go 50 miles an hour on them. Or if you do, you got to be awfully careful. So I am not going to ride in that situation with a large group of people, and I generally don't. And if you have any questions about that, you can ask anybody up here in the Mansfield area what it's like to ride with Ron, and you'll find I'm highly opinionated about it, and that's just the way it is. Roads with names, not numbers, much, much safer. And so there. Moving on, he says, though this is the law, it must change to grow bicycling as a viable means of transport. What we need instead is separate and protected bicycle infrastructure that does not intermingle with automobiles. You're absolutely correct. We certainly do need that. American roads are designed for cars to travel fast. They are not life-sized for people on bikes or walking, for that matter. It's scary, and especially for someone who would like to who would otherwise ride if we had the appropriate infrastructure designed around specifically for bikes. okay, Jim, I'm out there riding, and I am going to continue to ride on the roads with the cars. I am going to continue to learn how to communicate with the roads with the cars. And as more and more people do this, there's going to be more awareness, more attention to cycling, and we will eventually get those lanes that you're looking for. And we need those lanes you're looking for. I completely agree with you. No question about it. But until we get seen and noticed and recognized, unfortunately, we have to deal with automobiles. And people drive cars and trucks. People ride bicycles. We're going to have to get along together. That's what this is all about. And I'm really sorry that you're not comfortable with being out there, but I am, and I'm going to continue to promote how to ride safely with those people and how to not ride your bike, but drive your bike if you're playing in traffic, because that's the way it is. You're essentially playing in traffic, and you've got to learn how to communicate well with one another. That is the point to the show. That is the point to everything I'm talking about. You also state by building protected and separate bike infrastructure that is designed specifically for the size of people and not cars, we would see a larger percent of bicycle user growth. Absolutely true. The data from cities in Europe that has been done so shows this all to be true. True again. Also, the price of gas in Europe is 3 times the price of gas here in the United States. And why is it cost more? It doesn't cost more because it costs more for them to create and produce the petroleum. It costs more because they tax it. And they tax it so they can build their infrastructures within their countries and make cycling and walking safe for all. So the problem that we have here is inexpensive gasoline tax in the United States. And that is where our problem is. Until we accept the fact that it's more important to build our infrastructure for cycling and for walking and safe use of human beings and soft people, soft items on the highways, then we are not going to move forward on this. We need more legislation, which is going to be pushing the point across. So get local active, talk about it, bring it up to your town council, talk to them about what you want to see, go to the League of American Bicyclists and see what it requires to make your community bicycle friendly. It's quite an extensive journey to do that, and Bike Mansfield here in Mansfield has done that, and they are probably going to be listed as one of the bike-friendly towns in the state of Connecticut very shortly, as the approval, they're still waiting for approval. So as soon as I hear from that, I will let everyone know. But this is how you do it. You've got to go through the steps. You've got to get active. Reactive doesn't work. Active works great. So anyway, he says that my show promotes bicycle advocacy, but the philosophy fits instead into a car-centric model that the auto industry would have you promote, as it keeps people off bikes and in cars. This is similar to the reason that jaywalking is still a crime. It is it keeps the squishy, soft obstacles out of the way so cars can freely move. Well, why is it that cars can freely move but bicycles and pedestrians can't freely move? Let's ask that question. Let's address that. Once again, state, local government, legislature, talk to them about it. Let's get this changed. That's the point. So he writes here that MAMILS seem to be the only bicycle sect that prefers vehicular cycling, as bicycle commuters travel too slow and are in the way. So I you know, Fran, when she saw this, she said, "What is an MAMIL?" And if you go to look it up online, you will find that it is what is it? Men in Lycra. I got to remember this now, and I've completely spaced.
Middle-aged men in Lycra.
There it is. Middle-aged men in Lycra. So that is a mammal, okay?
That's pretty condescending.
Well, it is slightly condescending, but you know, he said it. I'm stating it. Here we go. I'm sort of a middle-aged man in Lycra. Actually, I'm getting to be an older man in Lycra, but it's, you know, but I am maintaining a youthful mindset and body of a middle-aged man in Lycra just because I ride my bike.
Well, I feel like that, you know, coming up with an acronym like that means that the speaker, I don't mean necessarily this gentleman, but in general, he didn't make up the acronym. So there's a condescension towards people who dare to wear Lycra. as though there's something wrong with that.
I know. But, you know, that's his opinion. That's fine. I wear Lycra. I am proud to wear Lycra. I've been wearing cycling shorts my whole life.
I think the presumption is that if you wear Lycra, you think you're a Tour de France rider. I've heard that said. And I have a comment on that.
Good.
That people say that you think you're a big deal. I've heard back in the day, you think you're Lance Armstrong. You're wearing Lycra. You're wearing those bike clothes. And the thing is, I'm just curious. Would you say to a football player, "Oh, look at somebody who's playing, football with his buddies. Oh, look at you! You're wearing a football jersey and tight shorts. You think you're,
Tom Brady.
Thank you. You're Tom right. Brady. Brady.
Yeah. Sorry.
Would you say to a bunch of kids who are playing soccer in a field, look at you in those soccer jerseys and shorts. You think you're Pelé.
Yeah.
So the reason that you wear cycling clothes that have Lycra in them is because of their fit and their function.
It's a function thing, right?
You wear
exactly.
them because when you wear cycling shorts, they are fitted to your body. They have a pad so that you don't get sore while you're sitting on the saddle. They're technical, so they wick sweat. And I remember when I used to wear regular clothes on bicycles, they would get caught in the chains all the time.
And they do.
So you wear fitted clothes so that they don't get caught in the chains.
There is purpose. And it doesn't have to be Lycra. You can wear other fashionable items that are made for cycling that are very functional, and you don't necessarily have to be in Lycra. So,
well, I think the mammal comment is
it's a
comment. The word means you're a wannabe, that you want to be something that you're not. And if you're wearing a solid colored high visibility jersey and a pair of black shorts and a pair of socks, what are you trying to be? You're just wearing something that's going to make it easier for you to cycle and also to be visible. That's another issue. Now, it is, and the thing is, I think that the most wonderful thing is that people are getting on bicycles. And if they want to wear funny clothes and different colors and that say funny things on them, or even if they want to wear a jersey that says Sky on it or says one of the teams that they support, because, who doesn't – if you watch football in Britain, don't you get soccer jerseys from your favorite teams?
Yeah, and people just do that, And I go to University of Connecticut basketball games, and there's a lot of people sitting in the stands with basketball jerseys
of
on
their favorite person.
They're not even playing basketball. They're just, living the part and enjoying the game.
So if you do it because it's...
Yeah. No
so
big deal.
You do it because
no
it's deal. Fun.
Okay, so the comment that he goes on to say is, this is not bicycle advocacy, nor is it human-centered advocacy. As a bicycle podcaster, I find it odd that you are not familiar with Copenhagen's bicycle infrastructure. I am very familiar with it, by the way, Jim, just so you know. I recommend Googling Mikkel Colville Andersen, and I have watched a number of Mikkel's videos. He also does a lot of TED Talks. He's very good. He's an infrastructure person that is very connected to the future and the way we should be going as far as building our communities in a safer, more transportation-oriented society that is not necessarily consuming fossil fuels. So he's a good guy, and he's got a lot of good information. So I appreciate your reminding me of him, but I've spent countless hours watching some of the YouTube videos, and I highly recommend that you do that. And if anybody else here is listening, he's really got some great things to say. And so his final comment is, other than your opinion on the subject, I do enjoy your show. So, hey, at the end, he really enjoys the show. That's great. Thanks, Jim. I really enjoy the fact that you made comment to my show. I do really appreciate that. And if you want to go and check out a little bit more about the whole Copenhagen bicycle infrastructure, the whole project that's out there, you should probably work your way over to my Facebook page. I will have it posted later on this afternoon, and I'll have some links for you to take a look at, because it's brilliant what they're doing over there. But they are very bicycle-centric. the price of gasoline in Copenhagen is probably four times the price of what it is here. They use the money to build the infrastructure. They're into it at a very different level than we are. And I, boy, if we could be there, it would be a great thing. I watched another TED Talk with a woman who was from Portland, Oregon, and she went over to Copenhagen to just to study what they were doing and to learn from them and talk to their engineers and their traffic engineers to learn how they all did it, because they're a model society. They're really a model society to cycling, and it's really cool. I have another comment that came in on some feedback on episode 72, and the person, I believe, is Pat, and Pat says that she appreciates anyone who works to promote cycling, and it was the first time that she had actually listened to the podcast. So thank you very much for listening. I do appreciate that. One of the things that she had mentioned in here was about the box turn. And so she said that I didn't seem to know anything about the box turn as I talked about it. You discounted it even though you seem not to understand it. Well, I do understand it. And I, again, am posting a video onto the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, which will show you exactly how the box turn works. I just choose not to use the box turn. And she states that there are times that the box turn works well and it's absolutely aligned with the traffic laws. I agree with the idea of driving my bike versus riding my bike. I've got over 6,200 miles on the roads this year. I drive my bike. The box turn is a legitimate alternative to making a left turn. You are correct. It is. And then she said, I would respectfully suggest that you research this topic further and clarify in the future podcast that this is the technique that is safe and effective. It's also an alternative legal option. So anyway, Pat, thank you very much for the comment. I really appreciate it. If you want to know what a box turn is, I'm going to try to put it into some sort of text here as I talk about it. And what you do with a box turn, if you're going to make that left turn, you're at a four-way intersection and it's crowded and busy and you don't want to get out in traffic to get over to the left side to put your hand out and make that left turn, what you do is you ride through the intersection, and then after you've passed through the intersection, you make a right-hand turn, love this one, against traffic in that lane, you turn your bike around, or you make the left-hand turn with traffic, and then immediately you turn your bike so that now you're in the straight lane on the other side of the intersection so you can go straight across and not have to make that left turn. Personally, it's an extra step I'd rather not do, and I would rather teach drivers of, people who are driving cars and trucks that I belong on the road as much as anybody else belongs on the road, and so I'm going to choose to do it that way. And if you want to do it the other way, you can do it that way too. Once again, I will have this posted on my Facebook page so you can learn all about the box turn and how it all works. And I do appreciate your listening to the show. Thank you very much. So we are going to move forward on that. And once again, I do encourage comments. I love to hear your comments. If you get to a point where you really want to talk about this more, you can always call us while we're on the air. And you can contact us in that way, and we can actually have a conversation, face to face, so to speak, on the air, which would be very nice. Or if you want to be a guest on the show, just contact me, and I'd be very, very happy to include you in future discussions here, because we're all here to get we're all here because we love bikes. We're all here because we want the same thing from it. So let's keep that communication open. And keep it positive, please. That's always helpful. I appreciate that. And I will try to do the same. So the next thing I have here is a little piece from Bicycling Magazine. And it's very good. Bicycling Magazine has lots of really cool stuff. And one of the things they said were five things that cyclists are told that are totally wrong. The sub-statement under that is, how often have you heard this unhelpful cycling advice? So anyway, we're going to put your weight back when you're descending. Now, this is probably more of a mountain bike thing than it is a road bike thing, but it can happen. So anyway, if you're the mountain bike technology that was made back in the 80s and 90s was, yeah, it was a long time ago. So the bikes were a little bit different. They were configured differently. And now the bikes are configured to the point where you really don't have to do that any longer. And you can really kind of center your weight better on the bikes now. But yeah, years ago, or if you're riding a very old bike, it helps get your weight back when you're descending because it does help keep that rear wheel on the ground. But as our technology moves forward, then it's a good thing. It's definitely a very, very good thing. The next one on the list here is you need to lose weight to climb faster. Well, you know, that's a tough one. You know, it's power to weight ratio. That's what it's all about. And, you know, you're not going to get a whole lot better if you lose 5 pounds. And what you may end up with is you may end up with that 5 pounds turning into a physical problem with your health. So it's a gray area. You don't really need to lose weight to climb faster. You just need to get your technique better. So. Fran, do you have a call sitting for me? Okay. Would you like to go to that? We can take a break on this one and we can come back to it. So we have a caller on the line.
Yes.
And who is my caller? Are you there? Is there a caller? We're waiting. So anyway, caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, there we go.
Hi, Ron. This is Mike from Eastford. How are you today?
Yay, Mike from Eastford. I'm doing great today, Mike from Eastford. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. I just wanted to, first of all, congratulations, you're getting more listeners.
Yeah, thank you.
Podcast. Fantastic. I just wanted to comment on a couple of things. I wasn't quite sure where to begin, but the first person who commented on your podcast there,
yeah,
I just wanted to address a couple of things and tie it into the self-driving car concept. Mm. I recently listened to a wonderful interview with Bob Letts, who is chairman and CEO of General Motors Corporation. And basically what he did was he declared that people driving their own cars, it's coming to an end. It's a dead thing.
Wow.
That autonomous cars, it's like the horse and buggy era.
Right.
Yeah, people are going to have their own cars that they drive, but primarily the cars on the street are going to be self-driven. And he brought up a lot of good points as to why that should happen.
Fire away. I'm dying to hear this.
The first one is purely safety. The mm-hmm. amount of carnage that's on our roads these days doesn't allow for independent thought on the roadways. Look at all the accidents that we have on the highways or just on the local roads. People are distracted. There are too many cars. One person wants to drive 90, another one person wants to drive 40. Then you mix in some rain or snow, and it's just chaos. And being driven by the insurance companies and just the basic fact of safety, more and more autonomous cars are going to be coming on the road. So probably by 2025, us driving our cars is going to be a thing of the past. Now,
right.
The reason I brought that up is relative to the comment you were making about driving on roads with names versus numbers.
Right.
And I think that's going to kind of take care of itself. I fully support that we should be putting money into infrastructure, bicycle infrastructure.
Yes.
1,000% I support that. I would like to see personally less cars on the road and less people driving their own cars, as long as the technology is there to make it safe for us. I know that when I drive on the highway, I'm 66 years old, I drive on the highway, and it's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I know. It's way different. Well, here you go. Here's
it's not like it was 25 years ago when I moved here to Eastford, 30 years ago when I moved to Eastford.
Not at all. And, you know, in the first half of 2016, there were 17,775 deaths on the road in the first half of the year, which was up 10.4% from the same period in 2015.
We're talking war numbers.
Yeah, we are.
You know,
far greater than war numbers when
yeah.
you really start adding it all up and you take a look at, you know, how many years the Vietnam War was going on. I'm just going to pick that one because it comes from my era.
Sure.
But what did we lose? 55,000
yeah,
people?
50+,000.
Yeah, 55,000 people were lost in the Vietnam War. We lose in 2 years, we lose more than that in the U.S. in car accidents.
And that doesn't include the number of injuries, people maimed, amputations, lives destroyed, cars destroyed that have to be replaced, the amount of cost for all that, damage.
Yeah.
I had a person at the top of my driveway who was drunk, sliding in the snow, cut my telephone pole that feeds our house in half last winter.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've got to go out there and deal with this person who's wrapped around this pole. They're all bloody. They've broken their nose. They have lacerations everywhere. And I'm thinking to myself, seriously?
I know. And you know what? If they had been on a bicycle in the same condition, they would have got about 3 pedal strokes and fallen over.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Therefore, making our roads far safer.
So I wanted to bring up the whole thing. I agree with you about the technology not being a great thing right now as far as autonomy, but I think we really need to embrace it, accept it, and promote our part of this, how these cars need to be safe for us, and to promote more bikes on the road.
And that is the point. That is the point, is that, you know, if it is true that this is going to be far safer for those who are riding in motorized vehicles, then wonderful. But if it doesn't match with making it safer for pedestrians and cyclists, I got a problem with it.
Well, I think we need to bring that up as far as providing solutions and being advocates, because I think when you have people like Bob Lutz saying, us driving cars is a thing of the past, we've got to listen to this, and we've got to deal with it directly.
They see it. They see the writing on the wall. I mean, it's just a matter of time. And you know, you do have to start to wonder whether or not they're starting to have a bit of a fear of their liability making these vehicles, not the ones that are self-driving, but the ones that aren't, mm-hmm. and whether or not at some point there's going to be some legal issues against the car manufacturers.
Oh, I'm sure there will be. I'm sure they are.
Something is driving
thousands
it.
Of lawyers
right.
dealing with that.
Oh yeah, something is driving this in that direction. Something is making it happen. So I think that there's probably more lawsuits that are going to the manufacturers of the automobiles than there used to be, along with all the additional deaths that they're dealing with. And that would be my guess, because that's usually what scares people into doing things right, unfortunately.
Yes, unfortunately, we do have a tendency. I shouldn't say we have a tendency. We actually have this issue with we have to learn the hard way as
yes.
opposed to being proactive and finding solutions before we have the problem.
Right, exactly.
For myself, I can't wait for more autonomous technology. And the reason I mention that is because when I moved here, we bought our property in 86. We moved in 89 to Eastford, and it's bicycling nirvana out here.
Oh, God, is it ever. It's one of my favorite places to ride. I absolutely love it up there.
However, it has changed dramatically. The number of cars on the road, the number of, I'm going to try and be as nice about this as possible.
Oh, you don't have to be. I'm never nice about it.
The pickup trucks who think that brushing by me 6 inches away is fun, or blowing their diesel smoke at me. I think you call it coal rolling.
It's called
coal rolling.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, sort of thing. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of the fact that I'm a target for people to play with on the road when I'm either walking or riding my bicycle. And I want these autonomous products in these cars so that car is going to automatically swing 4 feet away from me, let alone 3 feet away from me.
Right.
Exactly. I'm hoping that they can move this along as quickly as possible.
I'm with you. And you know that the fine for coal rolling is ridiculous. It's you're violating the environmental protection system, the U.S. environmental protection system, and the it's like a $3,600 fine if you're caught coal rolling. Something crazy.
Ooh,
yeah.
I mean,
you got to get yourself a camera. And that's the other thing that, you know, this is another really good thing about cycling now, is that, you know, a lot of people are carrying cameras with them. And a lot of people who are driving in cars and trucks are not aware of the fact that there's a camera rolling the whole time, or the fact that someone like myself or like Fran in the instance that we had a number of years ago just flipped on her cell phone in the video camera and recorded the entire incident.
Oh, wow.
So not only did we get a video of it, but we had the verbiage of the driver of the vehicle telling me that the next time he sees me out on the road, he's going to run me right over. He threatened to kill me. And of course, you know, when you bring that up in front of the state police, for some reason they pay attention.
I imagine they do.
And so you know, that's why I'm always promoting the idea of your cell phone is the most powerful weapon you've ever owned, because it just, you know, it really it tells a story that can't be disputed. It really does.
That is for sure.
So,
well, listen, Ron, I'll let you go. Great show. Love listening to it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your listening. Thank you for your input, and thanks for calling in, too.
And thanks for letting me call. It's great to be able to digress into this sort of stuff.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And someday we're going to kidnap you and bring you down to the radio station and strap you into a chair here and have you join in for the day.
That would be fun. I would enjoy that.
All right. Well, keep that in mind and contact me if you want to do it, okay?
All right. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks. You too. All right. So, we were talking before that. That was a very nice call. I really appreciate that. Before that, we were talking about the five things that cyclists are told that are totally wrong. And this is by Bicycling Magazine. That's what we're talking about. And anyway, the next one on here is riding 2x2 is illegal. Oh, boy. This is one you may not hear from fellow cyclists, but rather from helpful drivers sharing the road, quote-unquote, with their two-wheeled compatriots. In most states, 39 to be exact, you are legally allowed to ride two abreast. However, the details do vary state by state and municipality to municipality. It's a good idea to research what the law says where you live or in places that you'll be traveling. In Hawaii, for example, you should ride single file unless a bike lane is wide enough to accommodate double file riding. In general, though, it's okay to ride 2x2 as long as you're not impeding traffic. Yes, and we have another caller.
Yes, this is Bruce from Lebanon.
Oh, good. Hi, Bruce from Lebanon. How are you?
Hey, Ron. You know, I find this very, very interesting. I too, saw that article in Bicycling Magazine about the Tesla.
Yeah.
You know, I agree with you that this is all, this autonomous driving thing it's got to be driven by things like the insurance industry and, you know, all of that stuff that involves money being won and lost. But I am not as quick to embrace the technology as your
no, you would not be.
not just because I'm the last guy in Connecticut that refuses to drive a car that isn't a stick shift. But think about this for a minute. If we're trying to have autonomous cars be the only vehicles that are going to be sold someday because there's a safety issue, what happens when they discover the safety issue on bicycles? Autonomous bicycles?
Oh, gosh. Boy, I hope not. Yeah,
well,
that's
but,
that. But you're right. You know, and the thing is, you know, if it truly does work, if it really does work, as our previous caller was talking about, and as the, you know, the president of GM was stating and the direction that they're going to head, if it does really work and it does make it safer for us on our bicycles and or walking, then they won't have to go there with us.
Oh, yes, they will.
No.
Of course they will. We hit fixed objects. We hit each other.
We do.
You know that to be true.
Yeah, it's true.
And what bothers me about this is, and I get this, it's like as a cyclist, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, well, if, and it's a big if, autonomous driving cars could be created in such a fashion that they were 100% reliable, wow, that would be really great for me. Oh, but wait, don't put that on my bicycle.
Right. Right.
And I am one of those people. I guess I am getting old. But I enjoy what used to be called the man machine interface.
Right.
I want to be able to shift, whether it's my bicycle or it's my car or it's my motorcycle. I want to be able to look at the road ahead of me and make decisions and use my brain, which they tell me is good for my brain health.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't want to be on a subway.
No.
And that's my fear. My fear
is
that's what this comes to.
I know.
And I understand. You
maybe.
But how far do we go, and when does it get to the point where I liked it when it was for you guys, but I don't like it when it's for me?
Right. I know. And you know, and the autonomous vehicle, you know, now that you know, we've already had two deaths due to it. And one was a cyclist being run over, which is what we, you know, brought to the show today. And then the other one was simply a car that was traveling in Florida, and the vehicle did not understand that it was driving underneath a tractor-trailer truck. So,
right.
You know, I mean, the technology is still very experimental, I think. And you know, as fast as technology goes forward, I'm sure we're going to see a lot more of this in the next few years, but... in the meantime, I'm going to work on my track stands, and I'm going to mess with the Google cars at the intersections because it sounds like fun.
That's a fun thing. But let me just say one thing in parting, and this may sound a little like contradictory to what I just said. I was very annoyed when I saw that Bicycling magazine article because the headline was all about how this self-driving car killed a cyclist, and when I read into it, somewhere in the text they said, no one knew whether any of the autonomous features were engaged at the time.
Yeah, there was an assumption. There was an assumption there, right?
Yeah, until you tell me that that was part of the cause of the accident, A, it's a non-story, and B, it certainly doesn't deserve the headline treatment that Bicycling magazine gave it.
Right. Well, they're looking for reaction to sell magazines, but that's. That's a common thing that's done with media. They're trying to get that reaction. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So anyway.
Okay, Bruce.
I'm gonna go home now and see if I can rig up my self-driving bicycle.
Yeah, there you go. Let me know when you get it. You could be like famous. I can say I knew you back in the day.
Well, and you might even see me be able to climb a hill.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Well, it's the self-driving bicycle with the hidden motor inside. There you go. There you are. All right.
Listen, I have to go wash my Lycra.
Okay, go wash your Lycra. That's great. Well, thank you, Bruce. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks for your comments. I do appreciate that. I'm going back to the five things that cyclists are told that are totally wrong, and we had just finished up with riding 2x2 is illegal. And it's not, by the way, it is not. And there are different laws in different states. And I know in Connecticut years ago, and I don't know if this has changed or not, but if there's 200 feet of visibility, both front and back on the cyclist, then you can ride side by side in the state of Connecticut. That's the way it used to be. So anyway, next one here is you need to pump your tires all the way up. No, not necessarily. I had a whole show on this that we talked about tire sizes, and we talked about the fact that, you know, if you're using a wider tire, you can use a little softer pressure. There's a lot of things here that pumping the tires up as hard as you can make them is not the answer. You put a 110-pound woman on a bike with 120 PSI in the tire, and it's just going to be horribly, horribly uncomfortable. That pressure should be closer to 75 pounds of pressure, not 120 pounds of pressure. It's old school thinking. And the other thing is that there's an awful lot of bicycles that are coming with wider tires now. A lot of people are moving towards the wider tires. And as they get wider, your bike gets a lot more comfortable and you're really not any less efficient. So that's a thing that we talked about before. And then the last thing on here is you need the right gear to win a race. Well, no. You don't even need the right gear to win the Saturday morning ride, should it be something that you're doing, a group ride or whatever. It's knowing how to ride the bike. It's knowing how to turn your legs over. And you know, it's about spinning. It's not about pushing. And, you know, there's not a lot of truth in that either. I got this argument with a customer of mine many, many years ago, and he said something to me about, I need bigger gear on my bike because I can't go fast enough. And I explained to him that the gears that I had on my bike when I was in a bicycle race up in Stowe, Vermont, we got clocked by a radar at 56 miles an hour going down the backside of Smuggler's Notch. And I had gears that were smaller than the gears that he was asking to put on his bike. So, you know, it's about turning the legs over. So those are the five things that that Bicycling Magazine says that our cyclists are told that are totally wrong. I have more, and I'm going to save them for next week because we are running out of time. And I will save them for next week because I have 10 suggestions from the Global Cycling Network. I love those guys. They're hysterically funny. If you ever get a chance to check them out on YouTube, they're really funny, and they have some funny things here to say. So I'm going to move forward on and away from that, but we'll be back. I don't have any more road booty out there. No one's answering me as to more road booty. Still always out there asking the question, what was the last thing that you found on the road, which is really interesting? Send it over to me. And I'd love to see that. Upcoming events, Thanksgiving next Thursday. Hey, do something nice on Thanksgiving. Do something that helps others. Be thankful for what you're doing. Enjoy your families, enjoy your friends, and have a great Thanksgiving. I will also probably mention this again next week because I'm on the air the day before. In addition to that, the March Farms Cyclocross Race of the Connecticut Series is in Bethlehem, Connecticut on November 24th. The Elm City Cyclocross Race in New Haven on December 17th, which will cap off the Connecticut Series of Cross. And Cross Nationals is in Reno, Nevada this year, January 9th through the 14th, 2018, similar to what we did here in Hartford in 2017. My name is Pedlin' Ron. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. You can call or text when we're on the air at 860-486-9487, or you can simply send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you would like to contribute to or be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedlin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Stores.